For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
It's me, Jay.
And Jay, so since the last time we recorded, number one, the season has started, which is obviously fun and fantastic.
Woohoo!
But there's been some interesting storylines. So what we're going to do for today is we just got finished recording the interview with Will Scouch. Scouch is not his real last name, although that would be really interesting if it was. It just happened to be a portmanteau of scouting and couch, which is where he got it from. And we talked a lot about he does a lot of prospects research and analysis. And so we had an interview that actually ran longer than we expected, but in a good way, because he was giving us just such great answers. And there's a lot of follow up. So that's coming your way in a little bit. Since the season is only really a couple games old as we record this, for example, you know, if you're a Detroit fan, like a lot of our listeners are, they've only played one game and their second game isn't until tomorrow. Some teams are actually just having their first game right now, like New Jersey. Who was playing Edmonton. And like I was telling Jay, I turned it on in the background and I walked away for a second and I came back and it was already 1-1, which is pretty interesting. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over a couple things that have happened recently, a couple storylines that we're interested in that are either happening now or that are, you know, projected to happen and that we're interested to see how they develop. And then we're just going to get to the interview. So, it's going to be an interview-heavy episode, I think. So, Jay, first of all, one of the major things that happened is the NHL went viral. The NHL actually got something to go viral. And, of course, it was the Philadelphia Flyers who made it happen. And
by no measure of them actually being responsible for it either. I don't think they can take credit for it. I think this is just one of those glorious moments where they just happened to be able to put their name on.
Something yeah, and so
destroyed everything.
So I am, of course, talking about Gritty, who is the Philadelphia Flyers mascot and nightmare fuel for a generation of children now. So Jay, I'll just ask it this way. So what are your thoughts on Gritty? Have you changed your thoughts since the introduction? Because I kind of think I have, and I'm interested to see if we've kind of gone on the same journey separately.
I'm glad you asked that, because my opinion has changed somewhat. I think my knee-jerk reaction, and I think a lot of people had the same thing, which was something between Tote's face melting from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Vince McMahon gif where he's just tugging on his ear, looking really confused, looking everywhere like what is happening. So I think that was my reaction at first. But I've actually seen some accounts of there are some younger fans who actually kind of dig Gritty style. I've noticed that his Twitter account is not afraid of chirping. There's been a couple of instances where I think the Penguins have already tried to chastise him and Gritty's already responded in kind. So it appears as they say, Gritty has come to play.
And, yeah.
And I guess Gritty's growing on me. I'm still a little curious about what, you know, we've seen several mascots unveiled through the years. Obviously, most recently the Vegas mascot Chance, and that one wasn't like that one was just kind of perplexed. Like it was just kind of like, yes, it's a mascot, but it didn't really have any overarching or surprising features. It was, you know, like it's like a lizard dinosaur type thing, which is a classic trope of the mascot realm. But a name Chance, yes, they're in Vegas. Yep, everything's a game of chance, just like they took a chance on. Yeah. Putting a hockey team there. They ended up going to the cup final in the first flipping season. So
plus he's a rapper. So
yeah,
it worked out well.
Yes. It's all about synergy, but yeah, I think Gritty's was the type of thing where it's not so much I've recanted. I'll recant my statement. It's, I know what I felt but I'm allowed to change my mind. Yeah. So I think he's, I don't know if it's a he or she. I think we should obviously refer to in the general they. You know, we don't want to assign any gender pronouns just yet because, you know, just like the Philly Fanatic. I mean, they're, I must say, seeing the Fanatic and Gritty dancing on the dugout, that was actually pretty cool. It was kind of reminiscent of when Ricky Gervais won the Oscar for The Office, not won the Oscar, won the Emmy for The Office, but wasn't there, and Steve Carell had to accept it, which meant Daily Show won it, and all of them were jumping and hugging each other on the center stage there. That was the type of enthusiasm I saw with the Fanatic and Gritty hanging out. So yeah, my opinion has changed from abject horror to, you know, maybe a tolerable, terrifying thing. So what about yours?
Yeah, I definitely have gone through somewhat of a journey with this because originally I was thinking that is terrifying. I believe that I have seen Gritty before, and it was when I was 6 years old, and it was the creature that lived under my bed, and I was scared that it would grab my ankle every time I stepped out to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And but I don't know. I think I think it was, you know, JJ pointed this out, that basically the mascots are mainly for children, and the kids seem to like it. The kids seems to think it was interesting. And, you know, so I think I kind of have to remember that mascots aren't really for me. It's, you know, I am not the target audience. And if the kids are liking it, then that's fantastic. If it gets more people interested in hockey, then I am all for that. I think it's just that he looked, or, you know, again, we don't know if it's male or female, but it seemed like Gritty looked just so weird, like so different than what we might have been expecting. However, at the same time, there are, it's kind of like a mashup of several different mascot types, like tropes, if you will, I guess. Yep. You know, like you had mentioned the Philly Fanatic, like there, you know, the center part of the body is basically the same shape. And I just thought it was interesting, and I think I've realized that the two things that made me have the biggest reaction were, number one, just how strange the eyes were, because it has like the googly eyes where like they shake around.
Oh yes, they do.
It just kind of seemed to create an effect that was disturbing, I thought. So I think that was one thing, and then the other thing was the videos that they played to introduce it, where it like skates at you and then does like this slide. And it was just for me, it was the combination of those two things that just seems so weird. But like I said, at the same time, I am totally fine with Gritty. I don't really have a problem. I had to change the name on one of my fantasy hockey teams, and it's now Gritty Little Flyers. So thank you very much for allowing me to indulge my love of puns. So speaking of love, one of the things that Jay loves is talking about jerseys. And since the last time we recorded, we've gotten actually several jerseys, but we want to talk about one in particular because it is a classic. It is a sort of throwback, if you will. And I am, of course, talking about the Carolina Hurricanes announcing that they are going to play, I think it's two games this year, using the Hartford Whalers jersey, like an update to it. So, Jay, as somebody who grew up, I'm, you know, I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Milford, which is not that far from Hartford, maybe an hour less. I didn't go to Hartford too much when I was growing up. But, you know, I grew up, the Whalers were still there. And I was never a Whalers fan, but, you know, it was an important part of the environment. You know, a lot of people who lived in the area are still upset about the management, you know, quote unquote, stealing the team from them or leaving the city, whatever verbiage you want to use. And I know that there are some old school Hartford Whalers fans that are not very happy that Carolina is using this. So I guess, first of all, like, what do you think about the design, and what do you think about, is this something that they should have done, or is this kind of maybe a little bit of a slap in the face?
Man, it is a very what's the word? It is a polarizing happenstance that's happened here, because you all at once are excited about one of the most identifiable, classic, and also skilled in using negative space logos to ever be created on this earth. And you're excited that it could get some more play, but you're kind of confused about the circumstance because, as you already stated, yes, the team is no longer in Hartford and no longer called the Whalers. So I think it's certainly a bold move. I think I would have been more comfortable with it if it was a preseason exhibition at an arena in Hartford where they wore them. I don't know if I'm – I think I'm most disturbed by why are you wearing another city's jersey in another city? That's a little confusing to me. I guess in the professional, because again, yes. Okay. So you're honoring a team's history. Yes. It's a sad history. It's a sad history because of the way that it kind of wrapped up. You know, I think there's a lot of people that played there that, you know, Ray Ferraro, Brendan Shanahan, like there's a lot of still ill feelings about that. I think Nick Mercandante had the best, the reply to it, which was, please, we're already dead. Please, we're already dead.
Yeah. It's just reminding me of it's like the Simpsons. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Stop it. He's already dead. So yeah, I think it's right in the middle there, Pete, because I'm excited that, you know, the chance to have that jersey still being, you know, actually being recirculated in terms of production. That's really cool. Cause I think maybe before all you could really do was buy them on the secondary and counterfeit market, but to have newer, you know, I haven't looked at it close enough yet because I wonder if they made the jersey in the same vein as the new Adidas, jersey design with like the pad, like it's kind of like the really puffy padded design that's on the shoulders and like really nice and clean cut around. So I wonder if it shares most of that design when the team actually wears it. But I think at the end of the day, it is neat. But I'm standing with everybody else when it comes to maybe the feelings generated by it, because, you know, like look at the difference. You know, how would we feel if Winnipeg wore a Thrashers jersey? How would we feel if Arizona wore a Jets jersey? Or if the Dallas Stars wore a North Stars jersey, right? Like there's, I think some stuff maybe lends itself a little bit better because, sure. I think the difference between, you know, the North Stars and the Stars isn't too much of a leap, but, you know, I think especially when there's no, you know, we could go back and say, hey, even if Hartford left under better circumstances, which doesn't make sense because that means they would have never left. Yeah. So, you know, I think, how can I say it again and again? But you already know what I say. Yeah. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings?
The reason I asked you first is because I was pretty sure that we were going to be on the same page. Like we haven't talked about, I think we talked a little bit about this on text message when it first came out. And I pretty much agree with what you said. It's interesting because you mentioned Nick Mercadante. I was talking with him last night on DM and I thought about asking him, but I figured, you know, I'm not gonna rip off that Band-Aid or whatever. So I think as a fan of interesting jerseys, like I know obviously you are the jersey aficionado among between the two of us, but I do like the cool jerseys. Like whenever I play NHL and I have the ability to use like an older jersey, you know, so for like the Red Wings, like I'll go to like one of the Winter Classics or one of those like the old school jerseys. And like if you're playing Hockey Ultimate Team or something like that where you can use like, you know, maybe like a OHL jersey or a WHL jersey, I think it's cool, kind of like the different types of jerseys. But so from an aesthetic viewpoint, I really like that one. If I were to get a jersey that's not a Red Wings jersey, I think that would be probably near the top of the list. Although I do think I would probably just go with the old school one rather than the new ones. But it's kind of the same with, we had talked previous episode about the New Jersey Devils Christmas tree ones. It's just kind of like a, you know, kind of like a throwback, a nostalgic tie back to when I was younger growing up, you know, just starting to watch hockey and just starting to get into it. And so I think because of that, like, I associate good feelings with seeing that jersey, but I think you hit the nail on the head. So I'm not just going to repeat what you said, you know, with the, you know, kind of the reason why I think maybe it wasn't such a great idea. Speaking of not such a great idea, Tom Wilson doesn't really seem to have too many great ideas when it's when the question is, should I hit this guy or not? Should I launch my body into his head area? And so, surprise, surprise, Tom Wilson was not able to make it through the preseason without doing something incredibly dumb. And this time, the NHL has found the book, and they've wound up their arms and actually threw it at Tom Wilson, giving him 20-game suspension, which is one of the longer ones in especially recent history. I remember Dennis Wiedemann got 20 games for basically assaulting the linesman. I think Rafi Torres was 25. I think that was his biggest one. So Tom Wilson did something dumb. He basically gave somebody a concussion, separated his shoulder. If you've seen a picture after, the player he hit was did not look very good. He had a giant kind of scar on, not a scar, but like a wound on his face, basically, that made me think of like Omar and The Wire. it was a pretty giant cut. And so we've talked about Tom Wilson specifically, and we've talked about hits to the head, et cetera, and Department of Player Safety at length in the past. So you can imagine that we are both in support of this. In fact, if anything, I would have wanted it to be longer, just because I think the suspensions in general should be longer, especially for these types of hits. You know, if you really want to get it out of the game. So we're not going to spend a ton of time talking about it, but Jay, what was your reaction to this?
I was driving when I received the text, and I only glanced at it because you're not supposed to text and drive, kids.
Yep.
But I did see the notification flash across the screen, and I think my first reaction was that of, okay, that's – I think you already said it. I think I would have liked it to maybe be a little bit longer, but that's a pretty big statement. And based on the breakdown, which has been so lovingly done by Twitter, he basically forfeited all of his year salary in that span. So
more than his year salary.
I thought there was a little left over, but it's the whole thing.
Yeah, his salary, his actual salary, not non-signing bonus, is I think it's a tiny bit over $1 million, and he's going to forfeit about 1.3, 1.4, somewhere around there.
Okay, so I think I must have read the one tweet I saw wrong. Either way, he's basically now playing the game the way it's meant to be played, right, Pete? Just for fun.
Yes.
So I'm. Gosh, you know, what do we hope to come from this? Do we want Tom Wilson to just spend 20 games of introspection and reevaluating his style of play? And then will other players around the league look at this decision and then decide that they should do the same and completely change aspects of their playing style to accommodate more playing time as mandated by the league? So I think that's the hope here. I'm very curious if that'll actually happen. We've seen guys get these types of suspensions before and come back exactly the same and unchanged. So I guess this is the part where I guess if there was a live litmus test for the league in terms of reacting to the suspension. I mean, we heard from Caps players about it, specifically Devontae Smith-Pelly, whose statement was a little curious to me just because he maybe felt like maybe the NHL was like targeting him just because of his history. And like my rebuttal is kind of like, that's kind of the point. So, you know, if you behave a certain way and, you know, yes, I think Smith-Pelly's got a good point that at the end of the day, there are hits that look exactly the same, but will get ruled differently. And there is a little bit of, unfortunate gray area between, but I think Tom Wilson's behavior speaks for itself. This isn't some, you know, hey, you got the wrong guy. You know, yeah. I think that everybody knows that this is exactly who he is. The classic, he is who we thought he was.
Yeah, so it's like Maya Angelou, when somebody shows you who they are the first time, believe them.
Yeah, believe them.
And I mean, the only thing I want to say is, like, I think by giving him 20 games, I think the league is sending the message finally, which I think they should have done on the last suspension, if not earlier, is basically, if you don't stop, we are going to treat you like Matt Cook and Rafi Torres, which I think they need to do, because, I mean, the game moves very quickly. And I do think there are times, like, if you remember, was it last year or 2 years ago when Nyquist basically speared a guy in the face? And at the time, I basically said, like, objectively, it should be a longer suspension, because that is a really terrible thing to do. It's incredibly dangerous. However, in, you know, compared to what the typical suspension length is, I thought that it was about right. Because, like I said before, I mean, I pretty much advocate for longer suspensions across the board. But in the precedent that's been set, I think that the Nyquist suspension ended up being pretty much just about right. But somebody like him, you imagine he's not going to do that again. Obviously, it was definitely a horrible decision on his part. But based on his history, it seems incredibly unlikely that he's going to make that horrible judgment call again. Whereas Tom Wilson, this is who he is. If he sees a player that's defenseless, he is going to hit them, and he is more likely than not going to target their head. Whether or not he actually hits their head is another thing. But, like, this is what he does. When he hits, he launches his body upward. He targets the head. He is a predatory player. I wish it wasn't true. I don't know Tom Wilson. It could be the case where with a lot of these guys that off the ice, he's a great guy. But when he's on the ice, he is going to target you and try to hurt you. And the league needs to get that out of the game. Moving on, we have one more topic before we get to the interview with Will. So we're going to talk about some storylines that we've seen so far or that we're interested in. So we're going to do two each. So Jay, I'm going to let you go first. So what's either a storyline that you've seen so far in the league happening, or kind of like something that, you know, we don't know what's going on, we're interested in how a situation is going to play out. So what do you got?
I think my first thing that I would love to know that I'm going to try and keep the most eye on is obviously Edmonton with the, you know, like they had their overachieving year and then they had their setback year last year. So I'm pretty curious to see what, old Connie Mack and the Oilers are going to do, based on, you know, you have a really exciting, successful year, and then just a year you would just love to forget. And how do you respond to that? So I'm keeping an eye on that. And, you know, it does sound like a knee jerk, you know, obvious thing, but that doesn't discount it. I think it's very, very normal to wonder what this quote unquote savior is going to do this year. So yeah, I'm keeping an eye on what they do. My prediction is I think they make it back, but I don't think they're going to go very far. So that's,
yeah, no, I think, you know, like I said, as we're recording this right now, it is one, well, sorry, it's 2:01 Eastern time on, Saturday, the 6th. And, the NHL is in Sweden this year to start the season, among other places. And, New Jersey and Edmonton are playing. So, like I said before, that game got off to a very fast start. At the end of the first period, I think it's just 1-1. But yeah, Edmonton, New Jersey. It's funny because a few years ago, that would have been a nightmare game, because I grew up, you know, I grew up basically getting to see New Jersey play a lot, either on television or in person. And watching New Jersey play was always the most boring thing. It was always going to be the most boring game, because they were just going to shut you down on offense. And basically, if it got to be 1-0, you were lucky. You know, if you got to see a goal, you were lucky. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to see that how much New Jersey has changed in that regard. And now, you know, last year, living relatively close. I live probably an hour away from the arena in, you know, depending on traffic. And last year, I purposefully went to go see a couple Devils games, not just against the Red Wings, but I went to go see them play Washington and Edmonton. And they were entertaining games. It was cool. So yeah, I am definitely interested to see what happens in Edmonton. Connor McDavid is pretty much worth watching all by himself. I'm interested to see what happens with Puljujarvi, because I remember being very impressed with him in the game I saw live last year. And I was kind of wondering why he wasn't playing more. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Obviously they still have a lot of issues, but, and also Klefbom. I'm going to be really interested to see Klefbom, because he had, a very injury filled year last year. And for some reason, Chiarelli really wouldn't shut him down, which made no sense. If I remember correctly, they were trying to showcase him for a trade, which is always the best course of action, is to showcase a player who's injured for a trade, because that really helps you get the best return.
Absolutely, it does.
So my first storyline that I'm interested in is probably pretty obvious, but I think it's an important one, is going to be the William Nylander situation in Toronto. Since the last episode, there's been some developments. As of right now, William Nylander still is not signed. It does not really seem like they're close. It doesn't seem like this is one of those things where, like, oh, it's going to get done in the next couple of days. Obviously, as most of our fans are, most of our listeners are Red Wings fans, we remember this happening with Athanasiou last year. And it turned out that it seems like the relationship between Athanasiou and the Red Wings management is fine. And I remember being worried that the holdout basically meant that he was going to try to leave Detroit as soon as possible. And then he signed a 2-year deal when he didn't have to. So I think, you know, that's playing out well for Detroit. So it's not necessarily going to lead to bitterness between him and the Maple Leafs organization. But I mean, he's just a fantastic player. Kind of like in the interview coming up, we talked about Mitch Marner, and Nylander is, you know, the same, where he's a very exciting player. He makes a lot happen every time he's on the ice. And just as a neutral fan, I just like watching him play. And I'm hoping that this impasse is resolved pretty soon. And I think, I don't know. I think we're probably going to see him back within a week or two. But at the same time, you never know. This is, everybody thought that Tavares wasn't going to really actually test free agency, and he did. So, this might be a new path forward in the league. So that's my second, or my first one. I'm sorry. Jay, what's your second storyline that you're interested in?
From everything that's happening, I think the one thing I'm going to keep my very other precious eye on is just how much Ottawa will be imploding with the departure of Carlson. And conversely, maybe this is kind of a twofer, what Ottawa does, but then also how San Jose does.
Sure.
Because all the plans for the Doug Wilson statue have to have been like finalized years ago, right? Like even though he hasn't won a cup for them yet, the guy's earned his way into the Hall of Fame, I think, based on the acquisitions he's been able to pull off alone. And
sure,
he is a wheeler and a dealer. And that was, of all the ways to have it play out, I honestly didn't think it was going to be San Jose. I was feeling more it was going to be a Dallas thing, because that just sounded like a Jim Nill thing to do. was to just swoop in and just take Carlson from Ottawa and then just throw a bunch of stuff. So, but I'm keeping an eye on that. But maybe not so much the Sens, but more so for Brian 5 or 6, because I think we're on the verge of, for those who don't know, Brian 5 or 6 is a popular Sens Twitter personality. He raises a bunch of money for charities and stuff, but the Senators' behavior over the last few years has caused this guy, I don't know if this is all just surface stuff, if he's just playing to the crowd, but it sounds like just this is, he's taking it really hard, but he's a really good Canadian boy and he knows how to entertain people. So I'm interested to see how his sanity fares throughout the season. And all I can hope is that he can find some solace And I just need Eugene Melnyk to sell the team already. So
yeah, it's, go away forever. It's incredible. Like when this started happening, I realized just how many of the hockey Twitter people that I'm friends with are Senators fans. Like it was abnormally large amount compared to what I would have imagined. I mean, just off the top of my head, like Matt Cain. Let's see. Oh yeah, no, I can only list one. No, Dylan Galloway from Future Considerations that we interviewed. And I know there's more. I know there's more that I was not anticipating being Senators fans, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, sorry. You want to talk about something else? All right. So my last thing to wrap this up. My second storyline that I'm interested in is something that, again, and I'm going to promote the interview a little bit. It's something that we talked to Will about. Is I think that this is going to be a really interesting year for the Calder Trophy race, because I think, obviously, going in, Dahlin is going to be maybe not the overall favorite from everybody who would be trying to predict this. But obviously, with number one draft pick, he jumps right into the league. He's more than likely going to be able to make a big impact. But there's a lot of players. Elias Pettersson out in Vancouver is one of them. Andrei Svechnikov over in Carolina. Maybe as a dark horse, but we all kind of laughed when they took him. But Kotkaniemi in Montreal is off to a good start. I mean, I saw him play a little bit in the preseason. He didn't really light up the score sheet, but he was making good plays. And I'm not, like, if I were going to pick a top three, I'm not saying I would put him in it. But at the end of the year, if he was in the top three, I would not be surprised. It wouldn't be like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming at all. And, on the Red Wings side, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if we see Filip Zadina up before too long. I as much as I didn't want it to happen, I do think I have to say I agree with the decision to send him down. I think it would be different if he wasn't AHL eligible like Michael Rasmussen. If he had to go back to juniors, I think they would have kept him up with the NHL team. Because it's the same thing. It's like Michael Rasmussen, he didn't have a great first NHL game, but there's nothing left for him to learn in juniors. There's no point in him going back there. So it'll be interesting to see if Zadina comes up, at all, I guess. I mean, I think we'll see him at least maybe second half of the season. But yeah, like there's a lot of good rookies, and it's not even just those. I mean, there's probably like 10 rookies that could be in the top three, at the end of the year when we get all the votes and the finalists, top three, there definitely could be in that running. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see.
Absolutely agreed.
All right. So I've mentioned it a couple times. We have an interview coming up right now with Will. Will Scouch, if you will. It's a pen name. I don't actually know his real name. I figured it would be interesting to be like, all right, first question, what's your real name?
Yeah.
What's your name, soldier?
Where were you when you were born?
But yeah, it's a fantastic interview. And I'm not just saying that because it's our show, but it really was a good one. Because he's really well versed in prospects, and you can tell by listening to it just how much he knows and just how much research he does. It's a really good conversation. I really had fun doing it. And so we're going to play that for you, and then we'll see you on the other side and we'll close out the show. Our guest today is Will Scouch. It's a pen name, right? His first name is actually Will, but the last name comes from his site, Scouching. So basically a combination of the word scout and couch. Or I guess scouting and couch.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I always want to make sure that we give out the plug. So you can follow him on Twitter at Scouching, which is S-C-O-U-C-H-I-N-G. And so he founded that website. You can find it at... I had it. Yeah, you can find it at scouching.ca. So, Will, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so... I got to know you after we did our interview with Dylan Galloway from Future Considerations. And during the podcast, one of the questions that we got, I think from a reader, but this is something I was going to ask anyway, was you know, basically for people who are listening who want to get into what he's doing, you know, like what's the path? And I remember that he mentioned you, you know, he's like, you don't have to be part of an organization or whatever. Like, you can just kind of start doing it. And so when he told me about that, I looked into you, we got in touch and stuff. So I guess I just wanted to start with, like, how did you go from somebody who is just interested in this to where you are now? Like, kind of like, what was your path to get there?
It's a pretty long period of time. Like, as a kid, I was always the guy that, you know, like, everyone wanted to play in the NHL. And I mean, I was that way too when I was really little, but looking back on it, it's more like, I just wanted to be in hockey. Like, I didn't need to play. And the reason is, like, I had all of those NHL yearbooks that they would put out. Like, they were, I don't know, 200 pages long and, like, insanely detailed. And it had all the draft picks and all the stats and all the guys and whatever. And I would buy one every year and read it just cover to cover and just learn as much as I could. And the older I got, that never went away. And then when the internet became a thing, I mean, I remember the days before the internet, but I became the kid who was always on the internet as a, you know, 13-year-old guy on, you know, message boards and all this stuff. Like, HF boards was a thing and it was brand new and I was in there for some reason. But, you know, the older I got, with the more sort of analytical work that came out and the more that social media kind of evolved and more people started to really dig into sort of the sport, it kind of melded sort of my love for the sport. And I always have been fascinated by the draft. I'm the kind of person who's like thinking 2 or 3 years down the line all the time, like always, you know, trying to stay ahead of things, you know, trying to, you know, I don't want to be the person who kind of falls behind and is like an old curmudgeon. So in order to do that, you kind of have to stay ahead of what's going on and try to keep ahead of the curve. So for me, that instinct kind of led to the draft. You know, it's great that a hockey team might be good today, but if you're not, you know, to me, if you're not looking to be particularly competitive in a few years, that might be an issue, but it is still possible to do so. And the easiest way is through the draft. So for me, it kind of melded everything together. And I realized that there wasn't a lot of scouting kind of work that was being done online. Like, I know ever since there has been more of a push from sort of people on Twitter to do more work in the scouting world, but it's almost like very raw data. So what I've been trying to do is kind of meld the two. Like, when I first started, it was all data. I was just getting all the data I could. But that kind of turned into, okay, there are some guys who look really good on a stat sheet, but they're not turning out or they're not developing very well. And so I would go and look at the tape and wonder why and try to find reasons why. And the opposite is true too. So guys who might not show up on the stat sheet enough or too much, but maybe there's just a few things that need to be tweaked, and you go and look at tape and you go, okay, this person, you know, is doing things right. It's just not working out in terms of producing. So if there's a way I can bridge all of that together and sort of do, like, the idea is to do the work of an entire scouting team from never having to leave my house. And, and I mean, I like to check my own work. I have a list of players that, you know, would have gone, I since I'm in Toronto, you know, I take Leafs draft picks and say, okay, who would I have taken with based on who was left? And I have a list of all these guys from the last 3 years. And, like, I mean, I don't, it's turned out okay so far, I would say. Like, and if I can turn out okay, quote unquote, relative to a team that has, you know, a huge budget for scouting, then there might be some legs to this approach. Sure. So it's just been kind of more and more development on this and just keeping on expanding the scope and trying to do as much as I can and get as much data as I can to, you know, hopefully give people a better idea of what's coming down the line.
So how long did it take for you to come up with scouting?
Actually not that long. I was looking for a Twitter name, and I mean, it's kind of like, well, what am I trying to do here? Like, what's my angle? And I knew right away it was going to be draft based, you know, analytics. Like, that's kind of the angle. And it just kind of came together pretty quickly. I didn't need to really ask anyone. It just popped into my head. I mean, I wish there was a more entertaining story, but I mean, I was sitting on a couch and I went, I'm going to be doing this a lot. So let's, you know, go with that.
That's well, good. First of all, let's just get this out of the way, that that is the right story. That is the correct story you're supposed to say.
Right.
I was walking down the Parisian Boulevard and this bird flew across my face and I was struck with ideation.
Right. You know, yeah. None of that.
I'm glad that that's...
I think potato chips might have been involved. Like, it was it was greasy.
Oh, well, yeah. That's the type of work we like to hear about. The greasy work.
Good.
I know it's kind of a weird thing to lead off with, like asking somebody to basically toot their own horn, but what's your success story right now? Do you have one? What's the biggest turnout that you've discovered so far where you're like, oh man, I think I did this right.
I mean, I look back at the, I started this before the 2016 draft, and part of the reason I did this was because I, being in Toronto, knew that there was this sort of management shift that was going on, you know, guys mm-hmm. like Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas and Lou Lamoriello. Like it was very much a wide net of, at least from my interpretation, like a wide net of hockey people, right? Like very opposite ends of the spectrum. And then when you go into the 2016 draft, I was sitting there and watching who the Leafs were taking and just going, what are they doing? Like, what is happening? Like, because I was looking at the sheet and I was like, okay, last year in 2015, supposedly Kyle Dubas kind of helped run the draft table and guys like Dmytro Timoshov and Jeremy Bracco were, you know, value picks in the mid rounds. And you're like, that's great. Like, those guys have high ceilings. There's a lot of skill there right away. You can work. There's a nice little template to work with. But then you get to 2016 and you're taking a lot of size and not very much mobility, and you see what they're trying to get at, but you're wondering if that's where the league is going. And I mean, you look back in hindsight and you can tell it kind of hasn't gone that way. And so after that draft, I went, okay, who would I have taken? Because I need to put my foot down and say, you know, if I was in this situation today, the day after the draft, who would I have taken? And, you know, like the Leafs took Yegor Korshkov at 31. I have Jonathan Dahlin there, who is now, you know, in the AHL, but but has been a great player in Sweden for a few years and is a very high level prospect who's going to play with Elias Pettersson in Vancouver like forever. And I'm excited to see him, you know. At 62, I think they took Joseph Woll, if I'm not mistaken. I have Adam Fox there. Everyone knows Adam Fox now. Like, he was a part that helped land Dougie Hamilton, right? Like, he's a good enough prospect now where they parlayed that into something the Leafs could use, which is a top pair defenseman. So, you know, and at 72, I had Frederik Ejdahl, who last year was one of the best defensemen for his age in the AHL. Like, so right there, that's three guys between 31 and 72 that are looking like very, very good prospects relative to who the Leafs actually took. So, I mean, I like Joseph Woll, though, so I can't, whatever, be too upset. I mean, at the same time, I don't want to toot my horn too much, because at 122, I'm looking at my sheet here, at 122, I have Cole Candela, who the Vancouver Canucks took and never signed. So it's never going to be perfect. But then again, at 182 that year, I have Ty Ronning, who scored 60 goals last year in the WHL and is headed to the AHL. So it's a mixed bag, but I mean, if you can get, I mean, my late round picks for the Leafs right now are Ivan Chekovich, who is also, you know, almost made the Sharks this year. I've got Ty Ronning in here. I mean, like, there's some good options that might turn out to be good hockey players that were sixth round picks. So maybe my value would be more applicable as the draft goes on to find, you know, big swings you can take. But I mean, if you're asking about my quote unquote success story, it's still early, but I find it pretty promising.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted to circle back on something you said, because you know, like, one of these things I'm interested in is you had mentioned you know, Elias Pettersson in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to be a really interesting year for the Calder Trophy race, because obviously, you know, you got Dahlin, who is getting all the hype, you know, number one draft pick, franchise defenseman. You know, obviously there's a question about if he's like that next level, kind of like, you know, like Connor McDavid is more of like a generational type player, you know, depending on, obviously those labels are a little bit fluid and people use them a little differently.
Sure.
But I think it's interesting because it seems to me like somebody like Pettersson, maybe like even Miro Heiskanen, like it doesn't seem to me like it's just going to be like, oh, Dahlin is going to have a cakewalk to the Calder. So
yeah,
who do you think are going to be maybe some other players who could challenge, you know, who might be in, you know, that top five for voting that we, you know, well, I mean, obviously that we might think of, but, you know, especially if it's somebody like we might not think of.
Sure. I mean, Andrei Svechnikov could be in there. I mean, he was one of the best. I think he had the best goal scoring seasons at even strength in the OHL since Connor McDavid was drafted. And that's Connor McDavid. So obviously they're not the same player, but in terms of goal scoring, Svechnikov scored goals at about the same rate or better than Connor McDavid when he was drafted. So you're looking at a guy who could be a 30 goal scorer in his rookie year. He hasn't scored a goal yet, but he got his first point, I think, last night. So, you know, he's getting there, and I think Carolina's good enough to help him get to 30 goals, you know, if all goes well. So he might be in there with Pettersson and Heiskanen. I thought Henrik Borgstrom was going to make the team in Florida, and they sent him to the AHL. I mean, it makes sense. You know, you get him, you know, he just came from the NCAA, so send him down, give him, you know, 18 minutes a night, and maybe after 20 games you can bring him up. But a guy who is playing in the NHL is Christian Vesalainen, who I think could be a really interesting case for potentially a Calder vote. He fell pretty far in the draft and went to Winnipeg. And Winnipeg, I think it also is, you know, the Winnipeg team is so good that even if he isn't, let's say he's 80% of the player that they thought he was coming in, they're good enough to like buoy him up to a certain level. And from what I've seen, like, he's a really, really strong power winger who's going to just, I think he can shoot the lights out. And so if he can even get to, you know, 25 goals and 50 points in that realm, he might push himself into the Calder voting. But I think it's going to be an interesting sort of Pettersson versus Heiskanen kind of thing. And I mean, the edge goes to the forward usually with the Calder. So
yeah,
I think it's Pettersson right now. And especially after watching him play in the first, I think they've only played the one game, but I saw that game and, you know, they're easing him into the lineup, but I don't think it's going to take long for him to be like, they're going to give him the keys to the Ferrari, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. I know. I think he had he already has at least one goal, right? A goal and assist, I think.
A goal, yeah. A goal and an assist.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like, you know, like we said with Heiskanen, I know there's a Twitter, you know, somebody posted on Twitter, it's like, this is Heiskanen's first NHL shift. It's like, holy crap. Like, this is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to circle back and ask you something, because with Henrik Borgstrom, on our website on Winging It in Motown, we had we do a series every year with bold predictions. And so basically, you know, like the idea is like, you like what we do is we split up into groups, and then we make five bold predictions each, and then the other people in the group like will comment on it, you know, or respond to it. So like, you can't do something like Pettersson will win the Calder, because it's like, well, yeah, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, that's not really a bold prediction. So one of mine was that Borgstrom was going to be top three in Calder voting.
Yeah.
And then that was like, I wrote that, and then the next day they sent him down.
Yeah.
So like, do you think that there's a good chance that he'll be up in the near future, or do you think they're just going to kind of like let him develop in the AHL this year?
I think so. I think they're going to bring him up eventually. Like, I've seen Borgstrom play a few times. I watched one of the games he played in the NHL last year. Like, and I see it. Like, I see what they want out of him. Another thing to keep in mind is that he's a bit older than the other guys drafted in 2016. He's 21 now. So, you know, he's at that age where you're going, okay, you could play in the NHL. Like it's not outrageous for a 21-year-old who was drafted, you know, 2 years ago to play. So I think that they just want him to ease into things. And, you know, because the way he plays the game is with a lot of skill. Like, he has the most ridiculous set of hands that you're probably going to find on a player. And that's a great skill. But in the NHL, everything is so much quicker. Like, you need to think and process the game at such a high level. And going straight from the NCAA to the NHL, especially with someone who plays like he does, you know, you have to be really careful because you don't want to throw him in too hard. And I think what their logic is he can go to the AHL, he can play top line minutes, you know, you can rely on him to build on that skill set. And then, you know, maybe he spends the whole year there, but just judging from how high end he is and how good he was last year, it's probably going to be a thing where if he comes out of the gate and is like a point per game AHL player, they can look at him and go, especially if there's an injury, they can just go, okay, we'll bring you up. I'm just going to pull up Florida's roster depth because they also are pretty deep down the middle, if I'm not mistaken. Barkov, Trocheck, McCann. So yeah, they're two good centers deep, and I don't think you want him playing third line behind Vincent Trocheck right now. I think maybe you do if Florida maybe needs more offense or if he's lighting up the AHL. I could see it, but I also get the logic as to why you send him down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm glad you guys bring up one of the most annoying things about the sport that I love so much, which is the ebb and flow of how much a person needs in the AHL in order to make the leap, and obviously people vary. But first of all, I think Borgstrom needs to be up because his name is Borgstrom. If we can be serious for a moment.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of mad at Florida having all the good player names right now. Barkov, Bjugstad. Like, they are kind of hoarding a little bit of the picks in that regard. So I wish that they would turn some over to the rest of us.
They had a lot of Max too last year. Jared McCann, Jamie McGinn, Derek McKenzie.
Yep.
A lot of Max.
I think we're starting to see maybe the next metric that scouting is going to start judging players on. Based on,
yeah.
Yes, there's ability to how you perform on the forecheck. There's how you are on defense. There's how you are in the power play. And then it's what is your lineage? What is your name?
Yeah.
And then we're gonna find that one sweet spot where everything can intersects, and it's going to be this like blinding flashy moment where we all probably won't be able to recognize it because we're just so dumbfounded that it's actually happening.
Right. And then, there might be a word in the world of statistics for looking for variables like that, that have an effect, yeah. That are pointless and entirely stupid. So I'll look into that, but I think there's a word for that.
Yes. So as far as like draft, I guess I like talking because when we don't really get like too many draft centric folk. So I wanted to ask you when you're looking at drafts, I think the question I ask most often is what is the one thing that is in your mind, the one thing that you always look for that when you see it, you know, like, okay, this guy's going to be good. But I kind of wanted to flip it on the other side, which is what is the one area that constantly trips somebody up, in your opinion, when it comes to being drafted?
Do you mean like what trips somebody up is in like misjudging a player or
maybe just a skill that is regarded as, you know, really kind of something that teams aren't looking for straight. Like, yes, but more to what you were saying, but I was also thinking along the lines of, you know, is it offensive awareness? Is it positioning? Is it skating? Is it, you know, like what is the one thing that teams automatically when they see it where they're like,
yeah,
keep them away.
I think what comes to mind actually is something that that people like the public tends to look at a lot. I mean, you know, Twitter highlights and everything are great, and I think something really interesting to me is watching players who, when I watch them, I see a lot of individual efforts. You know, someone who's a great example of that this year is a guy ranked in the first round is Vasily Podkolzin, he plays in the Russian Junior League, and you know, he's ranked first round easily. Some guys top 10, top 5, he's all over the place, but he's right in there. And when I've watched a couple of games that he's been in, and I see a lot of individual effort. Like, he's blazing up the wing with the puck and cutting in, doing it all himself, going end to end. That's awesome. Like, that's great. It's really exciting to watch. It's just, the thing is, it's interesting to AB guys who play in junior versus watching an NHL game. You know, that it's been really interesting to me to watch, you know, junior hockey versus pro hockey and see the differences. And And you, I often ask myself when I see a junior player do something that you don't see in the NHL, is it the question is, how many times do you see that happen in the NHL? How many times do you see a winger circle from the goal line and go end to end and score a goal? It just doesn't happen in the NHL. There's a lot more puck movement. There's a lot more strategy. There's a lot more physicality. There's a lot more defense at play. So when you take a player like Podkolzin, who's going end to end and, you know, torching the opponent, and transplant him into a higher level, does that skill translate? Does that happen? And a lot of the time, you know, he can, you know, it's not like he's going to be a bust or anything, but it's something to keep in mind if you do draft that player. It's like, okay, his profile is he's a great skater. He can go end to end and everything. But, you know, there's other skills to the game that other players might be able to mitigate his threat level with. So I think just being able to AB between the NHL and the AHL and see guys who, you know, maybe are making simpler plays a lot more, guys who are not necessarily simpler, but maybe using their line more, using their teammates, guys who are positioning themselves really well. And I think people kind of, especially, you know, on Twitter and with social media and all these clips that show up, people kind of isolate really ridiculous high-end plays, which is great, but there's so much more to it. And I think at the same time, teams flip that around and look at everything that isn't that high-end play and go, okay, and they judge players based on really sort of minute level things that might, you know, be perfectly reasonable, but at the same time, it might be a little bit of nitpicking. And you know, and that's kind of why I like using sort of the statistical angle, because I can look at who's outperforming expectations, and then I can go to the tape and look and see what they're doing or what they're not doing, or, you know, what might be a situation where, okay, this person is producing a lot, but is there something that might hold them back from, you know, being a really, really high-end player?
Yeah, I was really interested in what you said about how for some players, like a goal that they can score in junior, they're not going to be able to score probably even in the AHL, let alone the NHL. It reminded me, I meant to talk about this on the podcast, I think the last one, where the on Craig Custance's Full 60 podcast, he had an interview with Daryl Belfry, who's a I guess he's technically a skills coach, but he doesn't like being called a skills coach. So right. I forget exactly what he prefers, but, it made me think of, how, you know, he was talking about how he evaluates players and he looks at, you know, how they did. And so, you know, he'll be like, okay, so in juniors you scored, you know, 40 goals or whatever, but it's like only 8 of those would translate to the NHL. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, this one, like, you skated into the crease and you stood there for 5 seconds and nobody touched you, and then you hit in a rebound. It's like in the NHL, it's like you would only score that goal if you and the puck arrived at the exact same time and you instantly shot it. Like you don't have, you know, half a second.
Yeah.
And so it reminded me of, I remember I got to see John Tavares in the World Juniors before he was drafted. And, you know, to kind of contrast that, I remember just being amazed with Tavares's ability to read the play. And it seemed like he was always open. And
yeah,
it was incredible. And then when you see him in the NHL, obviously it took him, like, you know, he didn't instantly come in and be able to do that. But, you know, even like I saw his first game in the NHL. Live, and I just remember it was kind of the same thing. Like, it wasn't the same level, obviously, because it's different competition, but he still had, even at the NHL level, he instantly had that ability to kind of find the open space. And you could tell that, you know, this is going to be something that's going to lead to him being able to be a special player.
Yeah, I think awareness is really important, and I try to look for that as much as possible. Like, a really good example of guys who just kind of know where to be is Dallas's second round pick from, I believe, last year, Jason Robertson, who plays in Kingston. He was on my stat sheet. Like, the only knock that I could find against his game is he's not much of like a not what I would call like a doer. Like, he doesn't like with the puck, he doesn't do a lot, but he scores a lot. Like it's hard to kind of explain, but you know, you give him the puck and you're not going to expect him to go end to end with it. You give him the puck, you're not going to think he's going to set up a play off the boards or something as a winger. What he does is he finds that open space. He's not the best skater, but you know, if he can figure that out, then you have a really smart offensive guy with a great shot who has good instincts, and that can take you a long way, especially if you're, say, in Dallas playing with a playmaking centerman who can just get to the puck. Like, I think that awareness is really important. And I mean, obviously, I'm not trying to equate John Tavares with a second round draft pick and Jason Robertson, because John Tavares is John Tavares. But it goes to what you're saying. Like, it does matter. Like that instinct, and it may not look flashy. And I think that is where scouts kind of have it right and have it, you know, you want guys who are intelligent while they're on the ice, especially playing, if they're a scoring forward, you know, are they doing it intelligently and like a pro, or are they just getting by on their own talent? And, you know, and you can't get by on your own talent. I don't want to sound like you can't, but it's a lot easier if you just are a guy who's like, I need to find open space and call for a pass, or I need to sneak around and find a way to set myself up so that when the puck hits the goalie's pads, I'm right in position to get that rebound. Like, you know, it's a different type of game. So, and I think that's more translatable to the NHL than someone who is a really high skill, high speed, high octane thing. Like even someone, I don't want to be long-winded, but even being in Toronto, someone like Mitch Marner, you watch him in junior, and he is carrying the puck all game long. He's making plays where, when, like I think Jeff Merrick says, if you watch him play in junior, you don't see the play that he's about to make at all. No one does. Right. And then you see him do it and you're like, oh my God, like what the hell? How did that even happen? And in the NHL, I mean, he's a great playmaker. Like and that's how I'd categorize him right now. He's a great playmaker and an underrated goal scorer. But at his best, he's a really smart playmaker. But you don't see him pulling off the same kind of magic tricks, unless it's like, I think I saw some similar kind of stuff on a power play in Toronto in the preseason. Like the Toronto power play is just probably going to be disgusting this year. But Mitch Marner was a large part of that, just making these really complicated passing plays that in junior you might see, but you know stuff that results in an almost tap in goal, right? And so you see this kind of thing where a guy it's the probability of hitting the ceiling that you see in the NHL in junior, and then you translate it to the NHL, and it sometimes isn't always there, but at least you're taking that swing, you know, like at least Toronto took that swing on a guy like Mitch Marner, you know, and saw that high end vision, and it's kind of translated to the NHL, but in a different way. So it's all important to sort of keep all that in context, I guess.
Yeah, like
I've seen Mitch Marner so much, right, Pete? You know where I'm going with this.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Because Will, Pete has Mitch Marner at every magnificent level to try and beat me in NHL 19, and he succeeds.
Right.
So
that makes
sense. He like scores on a wrist shot from the blue line. Yeah. It's like incredible.
It's Pete scores on me with Marner that makes me seriously question what my budget needs to be in order to accommodate new controllers. Pete, I know you were going to dive into something there.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So you brought it up and I just had to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Will, I think we each have one more question and we'll close it out. So, you know, our podcast for sure is a podcast that covers the entire NHL, but a lot of our listeners are Detroit fans, yes. Since, you know, we started on the same network. So, obviously, this year going in, you know, I was hoping for Quinn Hughes because I didn't think that Philip Sedin would be available at number six.
Right.
And obviously, when he became available, I was 100% on board with taking him. Yeah. But I remember going in, I was thinking like, oh, man, which defenseman are we going to get? And then it ended up that the first defenseman we drafted was Jared McIsaac, who definitely seems like he could be a very good NHL player. But obviously Detroit really needs like a really high end defenseman. That's one of their gaping holes right now in terms of like a roster. So next year, I know that most of the top
picks are looking to be forwards, but are there, you know, are there some defensemen that could have the chance to develop into like that, you know, true number one defenseman that, you know, is so coveted in the NHL?
Yeah.
And can he please be drafted by us?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
can you just
make that happen here?
I would say to start for Red Wings fans, like the outlook for the team might not be optimistic for this season and your salary situation might not be great, but the draft that you guys just had was like one of my favorites. I have not made that a secret. I thought they absolutely blew it out of the park with who they picked, like almost throughout the whole draft, even through to the seventh round. Like it was just banger after banger. And so that gives you some level of, you know, comfort, but yeah. But
it really does.
And again, and a guy from and being a guy from Toronto, seeing all the really high end forward talent, you know, like looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs as they are now, it's kind of like the rebuild is showing its effects. And like, yes, they're a bit shallow on defense, but it's passable. And if your goaltending is really good, that makes it a lot easier. But so I going into a draft, you want the best player, and I do think there are defensemen this year who are going to be really, really excellent options. I think last year was the year for at least Canadian defensemen, or at least North Americans. I mean, there was just so many really, really awesome looking options. But this year there are some. It's more forward heavy, but Matthew Robertson is a guy in Edmonton who I have my eye on. You know, really, he's got size to him, but he's not that size physical guy. He's more of a uses his size with skill to sort of get up the ice and get zone entries and zone exits. Like, and that's really, really valuable these days. I've been really enjoying Cam York, but he's a bit different. He's like an offensive puck carrier. Like he kind of reminds me a bit of Calgary's pick from 2017, Juuso Välimäki, who was no slouch to stepping into the offensive zone and getting involved in the play. And I think if the right team with the right system can capture that and be a responsible line around a player like Cam York, I think you're going to have a good hockey player. I mean, he has 6 points through four games with the development program, and they have been, I've watched, I think, two of those games. And in both of those games, you know, he's making a lot of that happen. So if you want like a playmaking offensive guy there, then that's another option. And I think Philip Broberg is a very similar type of player. And I like guys who play against men. I value that more, especially in Europe. I think there's a lot of players who fly under the radar because their point totals might not be there, or they just are playing maybe in the Swedish second division, so they're not as visible. But, you know, there's a lot of secret value hidden in that level. And Broberg, I believe, is playing in the Swedish second division against men. And I think he's already got himself a couple of assists after six games or so. And for a defenseman in that league at 17 years old, that's a great sign. And I think some people have had him as high as a top 10 pick. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that if Detroit's season doesn't go particularly well, he's a guy they could look at, especially if they're watching. You know, they just drafted Jonathan Berggren. So they're no strangers to drafting really high upside Swedish, you know, offense basically, and that he would give you more of that.
And plus his name is Broberg. Yes. So I mean, if we're going back to you know, like trying
what
to,
I'm saying this compete. Is what I'm
well,
saying
Florida yeah. Florida might snag him then, if that's the case. I mean, they're
oh, that is true.
It
might be
right. Florida, if you're listening, don't listen.
It might be between him and Antony Honka, which is just a amazing name. Yeah. Just, so we'll see where we're at in a year, but
we'll close this out. One thing I was perplexed by last season, and I guess this isn't something that's solely maybe in your purview, but just once again as a draft fan, just trying to get a better idea or better understanding. I mean, granted, yes, we all don't know how exactly the bingo balls fall in terms of how people are awarded their slots, but in terms, like, do you think that there's, because obviously Buffalo demonstrated that you can be last, which gets you first, but we've seen that you don't always have to finish last to get first. So do you have any wild theories or concrete evidence that could lead to maybe getting a better idea of how a team is evaluated to be worthy of the toppest, most special pick. Because last year I thought if the Red Wings finished, you know, again, my wild jerk face theory, which was, hey, the Red Wings have a new arena and we've stunk and the league cannot survive without a good Red Wings team. That's why we're going to get the first pick. But we obviously finished and got sixth. Whereas like, you know, before this year, I think it was last couple of first round, first overalls went to teams that didn't finish in the absolute bottom. Right. So, and if you have any insight, I would greatly welcome it. But if you don't, that's totally fine because chaos is chaos is our Lord, and we can't do anything. But my
first thought is ritual sacrifice. Like you go out, you know, as the season goes on. Let's say you have the seventh or eighth best lottery odds. Like you could, I mean, there's the octopus thing, but I'm not sure if they're still doing that. But I mean, I don't know, maybe ritual sacrifice of an inanimate object or something, like at center ice, like maybe a really cute teddy bear to like really push it, like really shock some people and get some gasps. Maybe the hockey gods will, you know, but to be serious, I think no matter what, everyone loves to just find things to complain about. And I think no matter what the draft lottery and getting the first overall pick, like outside of like a tournament to earn it, I don't see what you can do to make it really fair. My thought has always been to make all of the lottery picks lottery balls, like all 14 of them, or 15 now, soon to be 16, but like literally make it so that the team that's first with the best odds could pick 16th, and make it so that the team that is, say, 16th could pick first. I mean, that's how it is now, but maybe the 16th pick team could be 8th. I don't know. Like, you just pick, you give them the same odds that you have now, but every single pick, you just go, you know, okay, first overall will be blah, and second will be blah, and it could be in a completely different order than it is. Because, like, right now, especially when you look at something like this year's draft, there's a lot of really, really good talent available. And it's like, I know that you're not supposed to tank, and tanking, it gives you only what, a 20% chance of the first pick. But if I'm a rebuilding team, I look at it and go, okay, well, I can take the approach that, say, the Leafs took, where you go, okay, let's put a group of competent, okay veterans on the ice that will not win very many games, but will also not be a complete joke. And it, like the Leafs, when they bottomed out, at least on paper, like if you look at their analytics as a team, you could see the system was there. They were trying to instill a playing style that drove a lot of offense, and it just, they didn't have any good players. But at least they were trying to set the table so that when young guys get there, they know what they're doing, as opposed to someone like Buffalo, who went the opposite direction and just went with youth and just, you know, set the dumpster on fire and said, let's just try to win, and it just didn't work. So if you're looking at the draft and the lottery, and you know you're a Detroit Red Wings fan, I mean, it would have been nice last year to have won the lottery, and it would have been nice to see Buffalo not win it. But I mean, and like you said, the previous year was completely random. And I think a big problem with our sort of social media world is we have such a short patience span, I guess, like such little patience to see things through. Like, we keep changing rules because of things that are brought up on a relatively minor scale, you know, changing definitions of this or changing lottery odds because of this or whatever. And if you ask me, some people say, oh, let's just do a lottery where everyone has the same odds. It's like, well, then that makes it a lot harder for teams to really gauge their and plan out over the next whatever a period of time. Like, or they say, give, you know, the best team that doesn't make the playoffs should get the first overall pick. It's like, well, then you might have team, you know, I don't know. If it's like, if I have a wild card spot and there's 10 games left and I'm 2 points up on a playoff spot, but my team is just outperforming expectations, it's like, you know, maybe there's an incentive for me to just maybe give up a bit and take that first overall pick if I'm not going to be going far in the playoffs, like, to be realistic. I don't know if that's a realistic proposition for an NHL team, but anyway, my approach would be to just lotteryize all of the picks that don't make the playoffs and just throw things at the wall and see what happens, because I think that would be absolutely insane.
No, I think that would be interesting. I mean, I think that the way they do it, like, I don't have a huge problem with it, but I do definitely think that there is room for improvement in the current system.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, I think again, people will complain. Like, no matter what, people are going to find reasons to complain, you know, and there's nothing you can do about that. And I think people need to kind of take the foot off the gas pedal, because things seem to be changing constantly just to fix little minute issues that create other minute issues for a different group of people. So that's hard to mitigate without putting your foot down and saying, no, this is how this is going to work. And until there is, you know, a situation where similar to what was it? I forget the year, but during the NBA draft lottery for Patrick Ewing, there's this conspiracy theory that, like, the commissioner bent the envelope for the New York Knicks and threw it in, and so that when he reached in, he pulled out a bent envelope and it was the New York Knicks. So they knew, and you know, I don't know if there's legs to that, but you know, if there is a situation like that with the draft lottery now, something similar, then maybe they look at that and say, okay, maybe we switch things. But I think it's fine the way it is. The only change I would make them all lottery picks, like just all of them, just screw it.
Okay, yeah. I will sign an endorse.
I mean, if I'm crazy, if it's crazy, it's crazy. But that's the only change I would make.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Will. So this has been fantastic. We gotta wrap it up, unfortunately. But before we do, so like I said before, if you don't follow Will on Twitter, it's just at @scouching. It'll also be in the show notes for this episode. And before we wrap up, I just wanted to, like, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on now is because recently you've launched a Patreon. And so I wanted to obviously, you know, give you some promotion for that. But so I feel like, you know, to wrap it up. So tell our listeners, you know, basically, you know, pitch your Patreon. Like, why should people subscribe to it and give you some money to help you do what you're doing?
Yeah. So I wanted to expand this sort of project over the summer. I mean, I had some stuff in my personal life where I just kind of went, I need to do that. Like, I just need to do it, see what happens. So I want to give the best possible resource for both people who might work in the industry and people who are just regular guys like us. You know, I wanted to bridge that gap and bridge the gap between sort of the analytical world and the layman, like the guys who maybe are hockey fans and who just might be interested in this whole analytics thing, but not, you know, kind of spooked by the stuff that's going on. And then also adding my sort of own flavor with regards to the draft. So what I offer is, you know, I think I'm just looking at my tracking sheet from last year, and there are 500 players on here and data from, let's see, 22,400 games played. And, you know, like, so my approach is one scout can go in person and see what 100 to 200 games a year, being realistic. I, you know, and then you have a team of employed scouts that go and see a total of maybe 2,000 games, maybe more. I don't know. I'm not in that industry. But if I'm sitting here going, okay, there's 22,000 games worth of data here, I'm this season alone, I'm already up to, what is it, 600 and something. So obviously I'm not trying to replace scouting, that traditional world, but I think it's a valuable resource. And as a fan, especially if you're a team that is in that rebuild phase, you want to know what you're getting when you go into a draft, and a team wants to know what they're getting when you go into a draft. And I kind of go over it in a recent video. It's like, I'm not trying to say this player is good, this player is bad, this player is better than this player, this, you know, because I think that's really, really, it's so specific that it's vague, you know? And so I try to say, okay, what are you getting? Like, what package are you getting when you order this product? And like, what, you know, what are you investing in? You know, almost like a stock. So to me, what I'm trying to do is provide this data and this information so that fans and scouts or whoever can understand more about what they're getting and what they're doing. So on Patreon, what I'm trying to do is, you know, at the end of the year, I'll put up my sheet. It's going to be a bit edited, but I'll be putting it up for free so anyone can see it. So if you want to be patient until the end of the year, by all means, go nuts. But stuff like access to this prospect sheet that I have for any person at any time, that's available on Patreon. early access to videos where I'm starting to put together some stuff with more advanced, you know, looking at data and video at the same time to analyze a potential draft pick. Early access to those is also in there. So you can sort of stay a step ahead. And I mean, the more on Patreon that I mean, I work full time. So this is kind of just a hobby gig that I'm just kind of starting to build up. And so the more I get there, the more I'm able to do. And there's literally no bottom to this. I mean, again, there's 500 players in this sheet. So I could sit and make videos on players and pull video and get all that stuff and do it all day long if I wanted to. But I got to pay for a roof over my head. So so at the end of the day, like what I'm trying to offer is just sort of a window into the future, basically, without, you know, just by using sort of data. And on Patreon, you can also, if you want to just keep tabs on who your team has drafted and who other teams have drafted, there's also a separate sheet that I've kept private that is every single sort of under, I believe, 24 years old, every player that teams have acquired that is that age group, and just sort of puts them all and gives the same kind of metrics in that frame. So if you are a fan, you can check it out and keep tabs on guys and see who's, you know, who's coming from where. And then, I mean, if you get up to the, you know, high level things, which are, you know, I'm not going to lie, a bit pricey, but like, I think it's valuable. You can get direct access to me through, you know, live streaming every month, or direct access through emailing me, and just to get really specific tailored information from me, if that's something that you value. So I would check it out. It's totally optional, obviously. And again, like I said, this tracking sheet will be available for free, and it's, you know, going to be a bit edited and everything, but, you know, it's going to be basically what you get if you pay. But if you want that live access through the year, then you know where to go.
Awesome. Yeah. So, like I said, I mean, I am a supporter. Unfortunately, like I do think, like you said, I do think that the higher end things, I do think that they're valuable. Unfortunately for me, I can't afford that right now.
No, that's fine.
But like I said, I do think there's a lot of value there. So again, so if you want to see that, if you go to Will's Twitter, it's linked on there. Also, he has a YouTube channel that you can go to. And so, you know, you definitely find a lot of content for free. And then like Will was just saying, you can find some extra content if you're willing to pay. So, Will, thank you so much for coming. This was a great conversation. And we'll have to have you on again, probably maybe closer to the draft.
Anytime. I mean, I think Detroit's done really well. And if you want me back, I'm happy to be back. It's gonna be a big year for them. I think. I think the future's bright. So rest easy, I would say.
I've been wearing my shades when I watch the games this year so far.
Oh boy, see, just because I say time keeps on slipping, you just gotta one up me with your future. Hey, so bright.
Bring it on.
See how it is.
Bring it on.
Bring it on, all or nothing.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks a lot, Will, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, anytime.
Well, we thank Will once again for stopping by our lovely program. We can talk for hours and hours, but you know, that's our penance in life with these fun interviews, Pete. We have good ones, and we just want to keep talking forever and ever. But that is just about all the time we have for this week's edition of the For Sure podcast. If you'd like to follow along on the madness, because even though the season is still young, that still means that the clock has started, and we're going to be talking a lot about ice fight, or ice puck, or stick puck, as Pete likes to call it. So you can follow us on Twitter for the pod itself. It's at 200 Foot Pod. That's at 200FTPOD. And then if you want to follow Pete online, which, I mean, I recommend it, but, you know, some doctors recommend it within only a, you know, a decent dosage. Don't take too much. So he's at P Flynn Hockey. That's PFLYNNHOCKEY. If you want to follow me, because we all know that's the real reason you're listening to this. I am at @theroar_24. And now Peter will talk to you about a very special thing we've got going on. What's it about, Pete?
Yeah, all right. So typically at the end of each show, we mention our merchandise store, because you know, we always want to be promoting the podcast, and the merchandise that we have at the store is really cool. It's stuff that I've bought, you know, because I want to make sure it's good quality, because I do believe in the idea that we shouldn't be asking people to buy stuff that we wouldn't actually wear, you know. And so, you know, I have a t-shirt, I have a couple of the hoodies and a notebook and a pillow for the couch and all this stuff. So anyway, what we're going to do is for the Wingin' It in Motown site, we have launched our charity challenge for this year. And last year we raised $2,300 or over $2,300 for the Concussion Legacy Foundation. And obviously this is... you know, this is a charity that is doing work that is definitely close to Red Wings fans. You know, we've seen players, you know, not be able to play anymore because of concussions. We've seen the effects of what that can do, you know, both to former Red Wings and around the league. And, you know, some of those stories are just heartbreaking. So, last year I pitched to the group that we use this charity, and we did last year. So like I said, we raised $2,300, and we are doing that again this year for the site. And so first of all, go to Wingin in Motown and look for the charity challenge post. It is printed. It is posted right now on the front page. It's pinned there, so you should be able to see it there. And basically the general gist is that what you do is you pledge a certain amount of money for an event. So like, so say for example, if you want to pledge a dollar for every point that Dylan Larkin scores this year, and at the end of the season, you know, let's say he has, you know, let's be positive, he has 80 points. He did incredibly. So you make a pledge for $80. You share it with the Wingin' It in Motown Twitter account. And if you donate more than $25 or $25 or more, then you will be entered into the running for a Red Wings jersey of your choice. I remember last year's the person who picked it got an Alex Delvecchio jersey. So whatever player you want, you can get it, and we will send it to you you know, as a thank you for being in, you know, for helping us to donate to this worthy cause. And additionally, what Jay and I decided is that we are going to donate all the money we make from our merch store, which granted is not a ton, but it's something. We're going to donate all the money that we get from everything that's sold on our merch store to that challenge, to that charity for this month, right? So actually since the challenge started, which was I think October 2nd, so for, you know, the entire month of October and the entire month of November. So if you want to also go on and support the podcast, we are not going to be keeping any of the money we get, because we get, you know, a small portion of each purchase. So we're not going to keep any of that money for the next 2 months. We are going to send that to the Concussion Legacy Foundation. So if you want to both support the podcast, you know, promote it, wear your t-shirt out, tell other people about the podcast and they should listen to it. And if you also want to have some money get donated, that is a good way. Just before we wrap up, at the same time, I do want to encourage you to go to the Charity Challenge page and pledge there before you buy our merchandise. And the reason is because, let's say if you donate $50, all $50 of that is going to go to the charity, which is of course the ultimate goal. If you buy a t-shirt, it's going to be a couple bucks, you know, so you'll spend what, 15, 20 bucks or whatever, and only a couple dollars so that'll go. So, you know, we definitely want to encourage you to go to the site and pledge. But then if you also want to support the show, that'll be great. So like I said, it's a fantastic cause. We're working on maybe trying to get some additional raffle items. I've been talking to somebody who works at the Concussion Legacy Foundation about maybe being able to get, like, you know, maybe like a signed jersey from one of the players that is associated with it. And that would be pretty cool. So keep your eyes open for that. And again, thank you so much for listening. This is definitely a fun episode for us. Hopefully you have just as much fun listening to it, and we will be back at you in 2 weeks. And we have an incredible guest lined up. I don't want to say anything yet because it's pretty much confirmed, but with busy people, sometimes timelines can slip. So I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, but
do you know what we can say, Pete?
I think I know what we can say, and I'll let you close out the show with it.
All right. Game on, everybody.
For sure. For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.
For sure.